Welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast. I'm Jeff Peterson, your host, and I'm going to tell you right now, the guest that we have today that I'm going to get a chance to get to know, just because of his accent and his persona and his career path, makes me excited and think this is just going to be cool for me. If this is like, for me personally, I'm super fired up, not just because we're wearing similar clothes for this podcast, but because there's a cool factor about this guy, and I want everybody to get to know him. I want to get to know him. I don't know him yet. Let's bring him into the podcast. Emiliano Messias, welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I mean, the 90 seconds before we went live on this podcast, I just immediately thought you are like the guy that I want to like go hang out with. You know, it's like immediately comfortable. But the reality is, you're a composer, you're a pianist, and that takes you to a whole different level of like skill set and like the level of training and time that you've put into your craft is a whole different world. And so I want to, before we get too deep into that though, give me a little bit about your life, like where you kind of grew up, where you got your inspiration. What did you think you were going to be when you grew up? Because I don't know that at like 10 years old, you're like, I'm going to be a composer, a pianist that's, you know, doing all these things. What were you thinking? Where'd you grow up?
All right. First of all, thank you so much. Thank you for that introduction. And I loved it. And yeah, we're definitely connected about the clothes. This is great.
We didn't know. But we're so on trend. So on trend.
Yeah. I'm from Argentina. I'm nice. Originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina. This is funny because I live in New York. I moved to New York a couple of years ago. But right now I'm in Buenos Aires, Argentina, my hometown, after a couple of years that I haven't been visiting here. So it's really, really fun for me to do this interview with you because I'm actually in Buenos Aires, which I don't live here, but I was born here. So I don't know. Let me think. I'm a pianist and a composer, and I never thought that I was going to be that lucky to do what I love and just compose music and play the piano. I started playing when I was 3 or 4 years old in a small town in Buenos Aires, in the south of the city of Buenos Aires. And after that, that's all I did all my life. I studied piano, I studied classical piano, and I also studied a popular piano. I mean, I always loved jazz, I always loved rock, pop, Latin, tango, all styles in popular music, but I also loved classical music. So I did both careers at the same time. And then I also love to write music. I always love to orchestrate, to create songs, to create music. So I also studied composition and orchestration and direction. So yeah, I would say that I feel the luckiest that I can do that. And that makes me travel also, because that's why also I'm in Argentina now, because of some concerts that I have to give. And I've been traveling all around the world, thanks to music.
So at age 3, you certainly didn't wake up and say, hey, I want to learn the piano. You know, so what was the reason that piano was where you were kind of guided towards to learn? Like, what do you know about the reasoning behind having you start to learn the piano? Was it within your family? Was it a specific family member that was like, you're going to play the piano and start taking lessons? Did you learn from somebody within your family? Or was this like, I've got to go to piano lessons? Like, what was that? Where did it start? And like, what was the reasoning behind what they had you doing?
Well, the truth is that there was a piano in the living room of my home, and my brother and sister, who are older than me, they were taking some lessons there. But what I remember is that I just loved that huge thing that had keys and that you play them and it sounded great, and you start mixing the sound and it sounded great, and then you're like, oh, I know that melody and I want to try to play that melody. So I just got, I don't know, amazed by the instrument itself. Thank to that, my family decided to have a piano in the living room. I don't know what would have happened if I wouldn't have had like a piano near me, but clearly I loved that instrument at home. we used to have different, I remember there was a guitar, there was even a violin and things, but for me always the piano was that, I don't know, that sound, that huge thing, especially when I was three, it was very
well,
big.
And when you started taking lessons, were you very much like learning to read music, or were you starting to kind of, you know, as you kind of progress, were you kind of like hearing something and then being able to play it? Or was it always you focused on reading the music and technically playing? Like, what was that start for you?
That's a very interesting question, because for those who doesn't know, you know, you have those two kind of musicians who,
right.
Some of them, they can read exactly perfectly what is written, and some of them are equally amazing and super professional musicians, but maybe they don't even know how to read, especially in popular music, that happens a lot. And I have friends who are first level musicians that maybe they don't feel comfortable reading. In my case, I started reading when I actually started studying music properly and how to read music when I was 13. But from 3 to 13, I just spent every day playing the piano, which I feel thankful, because, you know, if you want to be a concert, like a pianist concertist like that, you need to start reading and studying from 3 or 4, and that's
right.
I never wanted that. I'm more into improvisation, popular music, composing and stuff like that. And there's nothing better than training your ear if you're going to do that, in my opinion. And training your ear means being connected with the instrument as much as possible and not with the paper, you know. And I'm not against, of course, that,
right?
But when you are talking about playing and when you're talking about creating and listening and trying to copy what it's sounding and stuff, you want to be very connected with the instrument. So I spent those 10 years just playing and learning, teaching myself basically how to play, how to make chords, how can I copy that song that I like and stuff. Then when I was 12, I started taking lessons, and I was lucky enough that my teacher also wasn't like a very traditional teacher. He was more into jazz, and he wanted to teach me how to improvise and how to play Take the A Train, you know, or things like that.
Sure.
When I was 12, I was like, oh, I love this song. So, of course, then I went to the conservatory, and this is when I started being very, very traditionally, you know, taking classes and learning how to read. And of course, nowadays, I know how to read and write and everything, but I'm thankful for those first years that actually connected only with the sound and with the instrument instead of connecting with the notes on the paper.
Is it possible, and I want you to kind of look back and, you know, take it from outsider's perspective here, looking at it, because of the journey that you had to get to where you are and how it started. Do you think it's possible that because you started the way you did, that the passion of wanting to play versus the structure of music and reading music and have it be more technical early on, did the passion drive you further into turning this into a career versus if you would have started that technical right in the beginning, would it have kind of crushed the passion side? And what do you think about yourself personally as far as what the difference would have been for you?
I love your questions, by the way. They're very interesting because I always think about this. And I'm very thankful for my mom in this case, because she was the one who decided not to put me a teacher because of that, exactly what you're saying.
Yep.
Because the truth is that my brother and sister were taking lessons before me, and they got bored and they didn't like it because they were doing like very traditional lessons. And they quit, basically. And then my mom, when she saw me playing, actually that teacher who used to come home, he was like, I want to teach him. And my mom was like, no, it's okay. It's okay. We'll wait. We'll take a break.
Right.
And then she just left me, you know, let's see what he does with the piano. And I think that's, you know, I know so many musicians that, or people that actually started studying, and then they just got tired and they were like, oh, this is not for me. And maybe it is for you, but you think that learning music means learning how to read, and that's just a little thing. I mean, learning music
right.
is not have, you know, and I experience this also with my students. I teach also music and piano, and it's funny because the first thing they say is like, I wanna know how to read, and I'm like, do you really wanna know that? And they're like, well, that's what I need, right, in order to learn music. I'm like, no, the Paul McCartney doesn't know how to read, and he's
right.
Paul McCartney, right?
I'm like, right.
I don't think you need that.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, wait, what? So there you go. I mean, music is much more nearer than we think.
And it really does end up being more about the personality of the individual and what fits them best. And I think so much of, even outside of music, I mean, you know, you've got parents that say, you're going to be a lawyer. You should be a lawyer. You should be a doctor. And that they kind of just drive the kids down a path, and they just end up being something completely different, because at the end of it all, they're like, I don't want to do it. And are they not wanting to do it because they were told they had to, or because they didn't want to? So there's this combination. So I love the way that it kind of progressed for you, because I think that's the way it was best. It was best for you. And I, you know, to have a mom that kind of saw that early on, I mean, yeah. That's a blessing. Yeah. That's not common. That's not common. What did you used to do when you weren't playing the piano? Like, what did you do for fun? What did you do outside, you know, of that kind of practice and that part of it? Who were you as a kid during the time you were playing the piano?
I was a quite introverted kid, and I think the piano was a perfect way to kind of, like, you know, connect with life. And I remember I always love harmonies. I love chords. For those who doesn't know, it's like whenever you play three keys or four keys at the same time, that is a chord. And I always loved that. I you know, finding a melody and put a chord and change another chord and try this and try that. I used to listen to a lot of music in those years when I was a kid, because thankfully also in my family, we used to have lots of, we used to have a record player and a lot of records and cassettes, of course, and from classical to popular to jazz to Latin to tango to folk. So, you know, I had my, like, favorite tunes, and I would go and listen to them and try to, you know, play them in the piano. And I'm finding that I think is really fun. When you start, you know, learning, and you discover that all these 88 keys that you have in front of you can replicate the melody that you're listening. So it's like, oh, wait a minute. So if I play this and then that's the same, like, the song I'm listening. So I used to love that part at the beginning, just discovering that powerful thing that the piano has that you can just.
So did you play soccer? Did you like art class? Were you terrible in math? You know, was like where was it that you kept on coming back to piano because of this or that? Like, you know, outside you weren't playing piano 12 hours a day as a kid. Like, how were you in school? Did you enjoy classwork? Did you ever sing? Were you part of the chorus? Did you take music outside of piano? Did you play any other instruments?
I never liked school, but I was good at, so it didn't take me much time, and I felt lucky about that. I never sang in choir in the school, but the music teacher used to call me all the time for whatever thing they need a pianist, or they need a, you know, there was a special act or show or whatever, they will call me all the time. So I was always escaping from classes because of rehearsals. And
good move.
I used to play soccer, but not much. And this is interesting because I'm Argentinian, and Argentinians love soccer.
Right. It's why I went there. You know, I'm like, were you out there booting the ball around? You know, what else was going on? So when you ended up finishing up in, you know, like, high school and did you go to university? Like, what was it more traditional in your education? Yeah. At that stage, did you say, I'm going to be a professional, you know, pianist or composer? Like, what was your thought with university and all the rest?
Yeah, well, I was, those years I was taking piano lessons with a teacher, a private teacher, and I went to him one day when I was 14 or 15, and I was like, I want to dedicate my life to this. So he recommended me to go to a conservatory, and then I went to university. I mean, when I was 18, 19, I was studying a very professionally, traditionally music. And as I said before, I was studying classical in a school, in a conservatory, and then I also was studying popular jazz, improvisation, and all of that in another school. So I was just dedicating my life to music. I was just studying every day, playing, writing, and doing things. Not performing, because I started performing when I was like probably 21 or 22 that I realized that I have to play. I mean, this is right. not just studying or learning. It's just, you know, playing for people. So this is when I actually started.
And what did it feel like? Outside. What did it feel like when you started to perform in front of not just people in your class or not just a professor or teacher? What was that feeling? Was it, were you scared to death or were you like, finally, like, what was that whole emotion, that roller coaster of it all?
I was scared to death. And I feel like with years, I actually, that turned into a beautiful thing. I mean, I nowadays I love to do that. And because you start realizing, you know, I remember I was scared to death because you feel like people are judging you or what they're going to say, or also whenever you're playing an instrument, you're being naked to a person. You're showing yourself, yeah. you know, with whatever you play, a song right. that you wrote or a song that you, so it's kind of like interesting how that works. And for me at the beginning was really hard, but then nowadays I really enjoyed it because you realize that more than the judgment, all of that is actually an enjoyment. People love that. Whatever you do, if they are musicians, they will appreciate it. If they're not, they will appreciate it much more because they know how hard that is. And
right.
And I just, when you discover that part, it has like an extra plus because we musicians, we already like to play the instrument. But when you realize that also people love it when you do it and they clap or they ask you for more, this is just heaven.
Well, and the thing about the piano, obviously, is, you know, it's not the quick, easy instrument to grab and play at somebody's house party. You know, you're not like, you know, pulling the piano out in the backyard, you know, by the pool and saying, hey, let's just have a quick little sing-along. It's a little bit more purposeful in where you go and play or what you bring with you to play and all that kind of thing. So it is you have to make that decision. I'm going to go out and start playing out and that kind of thing. So were you doing like the typical like musician gigs? Like at the bar on the corner, or was it always a whole different level of like concerts and you know performances? What did you do when you went out and played?
My very first time gigs were restaurants or bars.
Yeah,
and I loved that, and I think every musician loves that. Actually,
I think so too.
You know, Bill Joel will. Still like that. Of course, he doesn't want to do it anymore, but because he's tired. But there's something about that is unique and it's beautiful. And it's just, you know, you're connecting with the people there and they ask you a song or not, or you're just in a very relaxed mood. Those were my very first gigs, just playing music with a saxophone or with piano solo or with a trio or something like that. And then little by little, I started doing shows on theaters. I mean, I was, you know, I had a band and we would go and go to a theater and perform like with people sitting, not making noise. Of course, there's a huge difference when you play like as a background music or something where, you know, half of them, they're not even paying attention. Half of them, yes. That's what I'm saying. Like people sometimes feel like that's unrespectful. But when you understand what are you doing there? Actually, it's nice. It's fun. It's you know, you're just like playing at home, but with people. So some of them, maybe they're actually enjoying
there to watch you. And then the others are enjoying the fact that it is background music while they're meeting a friend or, you know, somebody they haven't seen in a while. And there is there's that cringe every time I go and see a musician at a bar or, you know, a smaller venue type of thing. And you've got people chatting and you get this cringe and you're like, man, they need to be quiet and listen to this artist. They've put all this time. They're in front of us. But those people probably didn't go there because they thought somebody was going to be playing and they had a different agenda, but they're enjoying it in a different way. And it is a weird mindset and it will play tricks on a musician and make them either get burned out from playing those gigs a little bit faster or they embrace it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you have to understand it. I mean, if you feel uncomfortable with that, it's just because you're a concert musician and you don't want to do that because, of course, no, you can't expect that people will actually pay attention, full attention, because this is not a concert and they want to have dinner, you know, it's like you said. But I think it has like a very positive also side.
So I'm going to ask you your two And they don't have to be your favorites, because I certainly don't want you to pick others and side against each other. But as far as the largest venue that you've played that had a huge impact on you, but then also the smallest that you've played, and it can be a coffee shop, and it can be like, give me the range of impact to you personally of like this show, this location, this impacted me for whatever reason, good, bad, or indifferent. What are the two, the largest and the smallest, and what that impact was and what you remember?
I will say the smallest will be a beautiful boutique restaurant that I used to play when I was in my 20s. And the reason is because I used to play.
What was the name of it?
Nacional, which means national.
Yep. And is it still around?
No. The building is still there, but they changed the name and they changed the owners. I was really lucky to find that spot because it was in the old town of Buenos Aires, in a very, very historic, beautiful area. This place was a boutique, very beautiful restaurant with like just 10 tables or 15 tables, like a very small thing. And they had this beautiful standway there. And I met there, which will be one of my best friends, the saxophone player, Marcelo is his name. And this is how we started. And I spent like 5 years there playing. Going there every weekend, we used to play, I think Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Going there for me was the best. It was, you know, and as I said before, it was a restaurant. People sometimes, they didn't even pay attention.
Yeah.
And sometimes everybody was listening and they were clapping for every song. So it was like that kind of surprise, that relationship with my friend, those talks that we had after playing. I never wanted to leave. It was funny because it was a gig. I used to get paid for that.
Sure.
But I would always leave without paying because I always forget about getting paid because I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. The owner was like, hey, I need to pay. I was like, you're right, sorry. So that was a sign for me that's like, okay, I'm having a great time clearly here because
awesome.
I don't even care. That was the smallest, it was, I would say, but big in meaning. And then when I moved to New York, I got to play at a very important festival at the Lincoln Center in New York. And that was, for me, was like, blew my mind because of all the, of, you know, being in New York, being in that theater, being in that piano with all that people around you helping you. And it was like a big shock for me. It was beautiful. I loved it. And for all these people, and you know, it was kind of like too much.
Yeah. Well, it's so cool to hear the span, but the meanings, the emotion and the meaning is still so personal, no matter the size of the venue.
Exactly.
And the number of people watching. And I think so many people miss that part as they move on with their career, to go back and remember that some of the smallest moments in time with the fewest people in the smallest location can end up being what has gotten you to where you are and what you kind of keep on going back to check yourself, almost check your passion, check your reason, check your purpose. And I love that you shared that because I could see it in your eyes when you were talking about, you know, that little restaurant. I could see you going all the way back and actually remembering it and picturing yourself there, which is cool.
Totally. Totally, totally. Yeah, it's exactly like you said it. Yes.
So what's next for you? What do you want to be next, and what do you think is actually next? I mean, wanting to be next doesn't necessarily mean that's happening soon, but like, where are you going? You know, what's up with going back to New York? You know, do you have some things in the hopper? Are you writing your own you know, music that you're partnering with some people, collaborating? What's up?
Yeah, I'm doing a million things. As I said, I'm right now in Buenos Aires, just visiting. I came to do some work that I had to do. I visit family and friends and stuff. I haven't been here for 3 years, which is quite a lot. But at the same time, I'm working a lot. And basically, New York, since I moved to New York, brought me into the musical theater scene that I wasn't planning and I wasn't really thinking of. And actually, I fell in love, and I'm writing music for musicals. I'm working with singers, with collaborators, with writers. And so right now I'm actually composing the music for a musical that hopefully will open in the next year or something. We are still working on the script and things, but it's a very nice, very important project for me, and I have been already composing the music for it for more than a year. I just got commissioned to compose another music for a theater in Colorado that I'm going to be flying in August to write the music and to teach the music to the actors and singers. I'm also working as an orchestrator. For example, there's this composer who hired me to orchestrate and arrange the songs that she actually wrote. I didn't write the songs, but I'm helping her to shape them and to put arrange. Some instruments and orchestrate. Exactly. And so a lot of composing things, which are like things that I do at home, basically, except Colorado, that I have to go there. But I love that work. I love to write songs and that's one of the things that I actually enjoy a lot, and sending to singers, you know, and listening to how they read the music, not read in the sense of reading, but how they interpret the music and how they play it, how they sing it. So that's what I'm mostly doing in the next few months, writing and collaborating with people in musical theater. But at the same time, being an Argentinian, I play tango music, and I'm going to be playing in a tango show also and touring with another show. So I'm dealing between performing piano, tango, and also composing music for musical theater.
I was just going to ask that because you're involved with Forever Tango.
Yes.
And how much of that kind of gave you notoriety, the thirst for that style of work? For these projects that you just talked about, I mean, that experience is it seems very parallel to kind of where you're going.
Yeah, totally. Well, Forever Tango was like another gift that New York brought me, because being in New York made me the connection with people that actually suggested and recommended me and everything. I ended up playing in that show, which also we tour around the world in beautiful, huge theaters. But playing tango helped me a lot in the sense of like the music I'm composing for musicals, it has always some Latin or tango flavor or influence. Sure. Like it's impossible for me not to put it. Like every time I write a song for a musical, the reaction from producers or people like that are like always like, this sounds so different from what we are used to. And it's not because I'm trying, it's because I don't know traditionally like a music I this Latin that it's in my veins, and I always try to, I don't even trance, you know. So when I write a song, there's always some Latin rhythm inside that fortunately people like it, so I do love it.
And you know, when you talked about earlier about, you know, doing working with jazz and kind of, I would love to hear what a Latin twist to jazz would sound like. I would hang out in that bar, that location, listening to that all night long. I mean, do you find yourself even putting a Latin twist on jazz?
Yes. One of the musicals I'm writing is called Bordello. And Bordello is a story, it's a real story that happened in Argentina, actually, at the beginning of the 20th century. And that's why they look for me, because they were looking for a Latin composer. And some of the songs that actually you can listen to that, there's a website called bordellothemusical.com. And some of the songs are actually tango mixed with jazz or tango mixed with pop or Latin mixed with jazz. Like there's a little bit of mix of things there that I don't want to mix like all of together. I don't like that. But as I said before, I don't even try. It's not that I try to do it. It comes right there. And then I don't realize until somebody listens to it and they're like, wow, this sounds like a mix of. So, but that's a good example. The other musical that I'm orchestrating, it's also an example because she is an American composer and she also wanted to give some of the songs some Latin flavor. So she actually requested that. So I did that. Like, her songs probably were more like musical theater, not necessarily Latin, and I kind of like mixed that, and I added some instruments and rhythms and styles that made them sound more like Latin.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that 90 seconds before we started this podcast, I was right. You are awesome. You're cool. I want to hang out with you. I've got to come and see. I want to come see you play. I want to. This has been a real joy for me to get to know you. And thanks for taking the time and sharing your journey and your passion. I think everybody has it. I can almost feel and hear exactly what that is going to, what you're going to sound like when I do get a chance to come and see you. It's going to just have an energy about it. And I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Emiliano, for being part of this podcast. And let's keep in touch, my friend.
Thank you so much, Chef. This was beautiful. Thanks so much.
All right. This has been the Interstate of Music podcast with my special guest, Emiliano Messias. And I mean, hey, you don't have to read music to be amazing. You know, maybe it helps later. You know, hey, but keep going. Keep going. Just play. Most important thing is just enjoy it. Find the passion in whatever it is you want to do and do it. Thank you so much.